Bloomberg Surveillance with Ken Pruitt and Tom Keene. If you're listening via our new Radio Plus iPhone app, did you know that our best interviews are often highlighted right on the main screen? If you don't have the Radio Plus iPhone app yet, you'll want to download it. It's free via the iTunes App Store.
He got it more right than anyone in 2011. Gary Schilling will join us as we look at full faith and credit bonds. Unlike the clock that's right twice a day, Mr. Schilling has written out thoughtful 40-page essays and tried to explain that full faith and credit is the place to be. And more than any other year that I can remember in his 5 or 6 year career, he nailed it in 2011. Gary, did you have anything like 2011 before in your career?
Yeah, in 08. 2008, I think we had a total of 8 recommendations, and they all worked. This time it was 15 out of 19.
But no one was on full faith and credit, with great respect to Bill Gross pushing away in the late summer. Did you get this right because of policy in Washington, or did you get this right because of macroeconomics?
I got it right because of macroeconomics, Tom. It was really a combination of things, the treasuries being the world's safe haven, prediction that Europe was in serious trouble and that would give that safe haven effect, the idea that the economies of the world were really going nowhere, that risk was on the downside, that you have the Fed working for you, trying to push down long rates. And above all, the conviction that what I called it back in 1981, when the 30-year Treasury was yielding 15.25%, I said we're entering the bond rally of a lifetime. And I simply thought it was still continuing, that all these forces, and eventually even deflation, were working in favor of the long bond.
So what do we do this year, Gary?
I think there's still some juice left. My target is 2.5% on the long bond. It's now I think
2.94.
2.94. Okay.
What kind of capital gain would that be going from 2.94?
That would be about 10% if it happened over a full year and you collected 2 coupons on a coupon bond and 12% on a 30-year zero coupon bond. And
right.
I think that's going to beat almost any other long investment.
What is the distinction between Ira Jersey at Credit Suisse, who says we will go to these low rates, but will be there just for a bit, versus your more sustained prediction?
Well, I simply think, you know, my latest book was called The Age of Deleveraging, Investment Strategies for a Decade of Slow Growth and Deflation.
You know, he's off the mark. It took him 4 minutes to get into a shameless plug.
Well,
he's slacking off.
By the way, did you guys also know that now I'm a Bloomberg columnist?
I did not know that. Well,
yeah.
You did. You had your wonderful column, I'm going to say 4 or 5 months ago. It was a series of 5 columns.
Well, now I've got a deal with Norm Perlstein. I'm going to write 25 columns a year for Bloomberg.
Well, congratulations. I did not know that. And we'll look forward to the movie Christmas of 2014. Can't save me here.
What would you absolutely, positively stay away from here in 2012? What's going to be the worst
I
investment?
I stay away from stocks. I think we're going to see a moderate recession in the U.S., compounded by a serious recession in Europe and a hard landing in China. In other words, a global slowdown. And I'm looking on the S&P 500 operating earnings of $80 a share. The street's looking more like 100 to 110, and a P.E. at the bottom of 10. Now, that would bring you to 800 on the S&P 500, and that would be a decline of about a third from where we are now.
Well, you know, in spite of all that volatility last year, the S&P finished the year, what was it, down 0.003, something like that?
Yeah, total return was up 2% because there were some dividends, which are important.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you that because the big dividend players tended to have a pretty good year.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, that was one of our 15 recommendations that worked last year was income-paying securities, because I think after 08, individual and institutional investors decided that they wanted the money here and now as opposed to capital gains pie in the sky out there in the wild blue yonder. So we're seeing companies that have high growing and sustainable dividends that are favored, utilities, some of the drug companies, and so on. The only problem with that, though, is that they may do relatively better in a bear market than the stock market, but that doesn't mean they'll necessarily increase. And I believe the name of the game is to make money, not simply to do better than the aggregate market.
So you want to stay with U.S. government securities, long U.S. government securities, and the dividend plays aren't going to work as well
this year. A separate item because, Ken, I've never bought long Treasury bonds for yield. I couldn't care less what the yield is as long as it's going down because then the price goes up. In other words, I buy them for the same reason that most people buy stocks, for appreciation. And whatever the yield is obviously a complement to that. On the other hand, things like utilities, high-quality corporates, munis, master limited partnerships, and so on, there you're buying them for yield. Appreciation is a hoped-for byproduct.
Excuse me. What will commodities do? Francisco Blanche, agreeing with the tepid growth you're seeing, sees commodities struggling to maintain the price surges that we associate with them. What's your call on oil?
Well, oil is very tricky. One of my themes continues to be North American energy because I think we as a nation has decided we want less dependence on imported energy from the likes of Venezuela, Nigeria, the Middle East, these unreliable places. And the problem with oil is you don't know what will happen with a group called OPEC. You've got a cartel out there that can really throw in a monkey wrench into any fundamental forecast. I concentrate more on metals like copper. Copper is my favorite because it goes into almost any manufactured product, and there's no cartel either on the demand or supply side. We've been short copper in our portfolios we manage, and we continue to be short copper.
Right.
Because and that's really also linked to a hard landing in China.
In 1 minute here, what did you get most wrong in 2011, and how do you analyze that forward?
Well, I think what we got the most wrong, and to say four of our 19 didn't work.
And I noticed that.
It was probably
it's a bad
North
year.
American energy, because on a total basis, decline in coal in coal stocks and natural gas really offset gains elsewhere within that sector. But what we've done now, we're concentrating on, in terms of natural gas, on pipelines, because the gas is cheaper, but they're producing more with shale, and they do need to build the pipelines to get it out of there.
Financial repression is supposed to be a free lunch to bail out the banks and provide a spirit to allow for loans. There's got to be a price. What is the price of financial repression?
The price is, I guess, recouping all the expansion and the exuberance that went before. I mean, sure, there's a price. I mean, it's got to be paid ultimately by individuals, taxpayers, depositors, everybody else involved.
But is yield lower and interest rates in a general sense lower because of reduced GDP expectations, or is it lower because the policy has made it lower?
Well, that's a cause and effect issue, Tom. Because,
granted, yes.
Because you wouldn't have low rates if there weren't the weak economies, and of course, I mean, there are ramifications. Depositors are sucking wind. I mean, and you look
what
at,
do they do?
You look at negative real returns
yes.
on German Treasury bills and U.S. Treasury. In other words, the lenders are paying for the privilege of lending money to the German government and the U.S. government.
If you get Ed Morris's $4 a gallon gas, you've got a negative real return going out 2 years, 5 years, 10 years.
Well, that's true because that becomes a huge tax. Yeah, I mean, yeah, but this again, this is the age of deleveraging. This is a long drawn out process, and there's, you know, the idea we're going to go back to the salad days of the 80s and 90s. I just don't see that
we're
for probably
salad
another five
now.
To 7 years.
Gary, we're eating salad now. Those were the steak days.
Those are the.
Yeah.
I think we're eating dog food. but my Labrador Retriever loves it. She eats everything we give her.
Gold has been up 11 years in a row. Is this the 12th year, Gary?
You know, I'm agnostic on gold.
Are you?
There are just too many forces pushing it around. I suppose you'd have to say the recent run has been disdain for fiat currencies, but beyond that, your guess is probably better than mine.
When you talk about the age of deleveraging, where are we?
Well,
game, what inning are we
in? Yeah, well, we're probably in about the fourth inning.
Oh, is that all?
Yeah. If you look at the extent to which the financial sector has reduced its leverage relative to the norm, which it started off back in the 70s, And the consumer sector in the U.S., it started leveraging up in the early 80s. And if you look at the degree to which you've worked back there, you're only about 20% of the way back. I think this process started in 2007 with the collapse of subprime mortgages,
sure.
which we now know the Fed missed completely in 06.
They, be nice.
But, okay. But it started then, and you know, here we are in early 2012, and I think we probably got another 5 to 7 years to go. And that's the good news, because if this were to happen, if this deleveraging were to happen in a year or two, we'd have a depression that would be even worse than the 1930s by a long shot. In other words, it's a painful, drawn-out process. Of course, the question is, do we have the political will as a nation to see it through? You know, at what point do people simply really get radical in their political response? And this is one of the things we're going to see later this year.
We talked to Donald Strazheim about this yesterday on China. He's got a 7.2% GDP. He calls that not a hard landing. He models 5% Chinese GDP as a hard
landing. Yeah, I'm looking for 5 or 6%.
Is that enough for political unrest in China?
It could be if it will last, but the Chinese leaders know from the history of the number of previous dynasties have been tossed out because of civil unrest that that's the last thing they want. So they probably will respond mm-hmm. with another massive stimulus program like they did in 09.
Gary Shilling on housing.
Housing. Housing, I think, has another 20% decline in prices. That's what it would take to bring it back to the long-term trend that goes back a century. House prices are flat since 1890, and this is Bob Schiller's work from Yale. If you remove two types of inflation, general inflation, call it CPI inflation, and the tendency of houses to get bigger over time. As we have higher living standards, we all want more bathrooms, fancier kitchens. You take those out, medium single-family house prices didn't go anywhere till the big bubble. They've come down and take another 20% to get back.
Ken just fell off his chair. Gary, you don't live in Manhattan. Bigger in Manhattan is a total apartment size. What'd you say, Ken? Like a hallway in Kansas City?
Yeah, something like that.
Large.
But of course,
my wife and I are rallying around a 5,000 square foot house in Short Hills, New Jersey. Our kids are four kids are long grown and gone.
The Labrador Retriever has its own wing.
The dog has its own wing. Yeah, she's got plenty of room to roam around.
Just briefly here, what we were hearing from appraiser Jonathan Miller is, since so many apartments in New York are co-ops and you have to pass a test to get in, we don't have the kind of crash that other parts of the country have. You can't buy unless you can afford to take kind of a hit.
Gary Shilling, thank you so much.
Listen to Bloomberg Surveillance weekday mornings at 7 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2012.